Welcome to the month end, the CPG community chat. The month end will provide emerging CPG brands real life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational world. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands, as well as other key contributors to the industry, which all have vast experiences and insights that will be shared with the audience. Everybody, welcome to episode 2 of the month end. I'm very excited about the next guest we have here. It's Molly Feening from Red Clay Hot Sauce, based out of Charleston, South Carolina. How are you doing today, Molly?
Good. How are you, Brad?
Can't complain. It's a beautiful day in Charleston, as normal. Molly's got a lot of kind of very interesting background, not just within the consumer package world, but also kind of the consumer products world. So I think this conversation should be really good because the experience and knowledge that she's gained over her career should come out in this interview here. So Molly, as we get started, can you give us a little bit of background of Red Clay and what you're selling, where you're selling at, and things like that, and then we will move on from there?
Yeah, sure. So I have been CEO of Red Clay for 2 years now. And it is a cold pressed, barrel aged hot sauce and hot honey brand based out of Charleston. And I've been in CPG for about 11 years with Baviators prior to that. But with Red Clay, I was initially just a sort of silent equity founder, stepped in when it sort of got to a point where it was a very well-loved product here in Charleston, plateauing at about 70,000 in revenue. And I was reading a lot about food and bev, CPG, and a great kind of all the really sort of interesting frothy growth strategies and exit strategies in the space, which is pretty unique to grocery. And we can talk about that, you know, and why today. Specifically Sir Kensington's ketchup, and it inspired me to really kind of play a more active role in Red Clay. And last year we grossed about 300,000 in revenue, and we're on track for about $1 million in revenue, so another 3x growth year over year, with also launching Whole Foods Fresh Market, and we just heard last week that we are launching Publix at the end of the year, so lots of great exciting momentum.
Awesome. That's congratulations on that growth. You mentioned Baviators, which are very awesome baby aviator sunglasses. For anybody out there, check them out. They are super cool. What did you do at Baviators, and what, I guess, experience did you take at that you've kind of applied to Red Clay?
So with Baviators, that is a decade old company. We actually incorporated 2010 October, so we're coming on our 10th birthday. And my husband is an aviator for the Marine Corps, so we came up with it, Baby Aviator, to, you know, protect kids' eyes the way that the Marine Corps protects pilots' eyes in the sky. And they're cute, and they're durable, and they're safe, and we guarantee them. And it was, and I'm still technically co-CEO of Baby Eaters. I started it with my husband and another couple. And I mean, so that was my MBA for sure. So many growth opportunities. I learned so much, specifically, obviously, the start of the world of CPG. But with four co-CEOs, each of us sort of had our own domain. And my wheelhouse was really brand voice, brand look and feel, speaking to the consumer, finding your tribe, sort of playing the CMO role, was not in much in the day-to-day on the finances. That was Matthew, not in the day-to-day on the operations. That's Carolyn. And Ted was still an active Marine, so he kind of came up with the idea and would chime in when available, but was, you know, on duty. I really honed my ability as kind of a marketing branding expert, I would say, through Baviators, and the power of speaking to your tribe, finding your tribe, whether it's through influencers or podcasts like this one or social media marketing efforts. And then once you have them, how do you engage them and keep them coming back for more? And so that really sort of, if I had to say what I learned the most through Baviators, it is that. And then as Red Clay, you know, Jeff really sort of focuses on the production and making these beautiful sauces. And then what we make next, you know, future food products that are delicious, complex, health promoting. And I'm really the business side. So here it's sort of I wear all the CEO hats that I did not have to wear in Babyators. So this has been a huge growth opportunity for me for the past 2 years on the financial side, on the operations side, on the team management side, since I always had a sort of cohort to like strategize with. Now it's very much like more independent, which is has goods and bads.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think, you know, since we started kind of conversing a year ago or so and have been, you know, working together, I think your brand name is phenomenal. I think your branding is great with Red Clay. So it seems like you brought that over to the entity as well. But yeah, on to kind of finance, accounting, operations in the bulk of this conversation.
Yeah.
So you already mentioned kind of where you're selling within Red Clay, clearly like Publix, Whole Foods, et cetera. Like what channels are you in, you know, and direct to consumer on your website, but what channels are you in and kind of what are your favorite channels? What don't you like? What do you like? Like, where do you see your opportunity moving forward of growing, and which channels are you going to kind of like look to expand into, and how are you going to do it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. You know, so from Babyators, I learned a lot about direct-to-consumer sales between Amazon and our own babyators.com website. I want to say those two channels together make up 50% of our revenue. I definitely, you know, as I stepped in as CEO, I worked to rebuild the website and to relaunch the branding before we did anything on the sales side, so that we could sell direct to consumer and grow that channel. Since it is my background and how I shop as a consumer, and typically you're not buying hot sauce direct to consumer. So this was sort of new for the market and has worked really well for us, specifically in the context of COVID with the past 4 or 5 months, where we've seen so much of grocery shopping going direct delivered to your door, direct to consumer, whether it's through specific sites or third party sites like Shipt or Fresh Direct or all the even sort of meal delivery services, what have you. But building a beautiful website for sure. Building out our Amazon channel. And that is something that is very complex. Amazon has lots of rules and regulations and flags you if you don't follow them. So I highly recommend either bringing that Amazon expert in house or partnering with a third party Amazon team to build out your site, because they understand keywords, they understand how the back end and even the fulfillment of Amazon works. If you're not getting it there on time, if you're not delivering it on time, they ding you and it hurts your business. And so those two definitely are key channels for Red Clay. On the grocery side, grocery is an incredibly unique industry. And I know you mentioned Jason was your first interview or last week, interviewee last week. And so he might have spoken to this as well, but it is one of the only industries that is pay to play. And so unlike children's retail, when Neiman Marcus buys a $50,000 order of sunglasses, they place the order, we send them shades, 45, 60 days net later, they pay us the check. Grocery, you are buying shelf space. So you're buying what they call slotting fees. And so that first order typically is a free gift to the grocery store for them to reserve your shelf space or slotting fee. And so in addition to that, you're also working with a third party broker who handles all the distribution. And so they're taking their cut. And then maybe there's a broker to get you into the broker. And so there's all these different, it is very capital intensive on the front end for businesses that are small. And a lot of them fail because they don't have enough capital. And so you have to raise money fast and often if you're a growing food and bev CPG startup, to play with the big guns like, you know, Kraft Heinz and Unilever and McCormick and all the sort of big strategic grocery companies that have a lot more cash than you do. Mm-hmm. That said, grocery, they are interested and focused on new cool products, local brands. And so there are ways to get in as a small business. For instance, with Whole Foods, they selected us as a local partner and we launched first in the South. And that's 40 doors of their, whatever it is, 450 doors. They currently have 426. Kristen Stein, what they call the local forager for the South. She was lovely and fell in love with the brand. And if you get in through that program, they waive the slotting fees because they know you are a small business and you can't pay what, you know, a Tabasco could pay or a bigger entity. So there are ways to survive, but I feel like we are going to grocery as a channel more cautiously because we don't want to pay to be on a bunch of shelves to then not get the flow through and lose the spot because we're not selling after we've put down all that cash. So Whole Foods, Fresh Market, Publix are really our three main focuses that are current accounts. And then I think we might, you know, on our radar is Wegmans, HEB, and Sprouts. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I kind of want to leave most of grocery on the table for whomever eventually buys Red Clay because it's not worth us raising all the cash, diluting our equity to do something that they could do very easily. If we've proven the model.
Yeah, it's super interesting as with the conflict with the clients that we have in the CPG space of all the different sales channels, because every sales channel, Amazon, Shopify, distribution, direct wholesale, and even food service, like I think I'm pretty sure you guys are in food service. Everyone has a specific strategy and a specific way to grow that brand, and you really need to understand each one of them. And I think, you know, being able to understand the capital needs of distribution or the advertising and brand needs of Shopify or Amazon is very important along the way. Do you have a favorite then? Would you consider, I guess, Shopify or Amazon your favorite sales channel?
I mean, yes, I love direct to consumer because it is your chance to, you really get to tell the full brand story. To your customer. And so that's everything from color palette to language you're using to beautiful imagery. It's also highest margin, so that's nice too.
Yes.
But really for me, who's like a branding nerd, I love looking at a beautiful, elegant, perfectly done site that, you know, tells a great story about the humans behind it and why they're making it. And for us, like, who is my partner, the chef, Jeff, that is, you crafted this beautiful sauce? And what is it, why is it so delicious? And what makes it different than every other hot sauce out there? And you don't get as much space anywhere else to tell that story.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Is there any kind of key metrics you look at within your D2C sales, like cost to acquire a customer or lifetime value or anything like that, that you're able to kind of quantify and look at?
Certainly. I mean, I'm definitely checking gross sales every day, month-to-date sales, year-to-date sales. I watch how we're tracking, you know, year over year on all of sort of gross sales across the platform. And then in terms of customers, reorder rate. So what percentage of our customers have ordered twice in the past 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. And then, yes, certainly like average order value. How is that trending up or down and why? And then lifetime consumer value. So if, you know, who are those super fans that are buying hundreds of dollars of sauce on our site a day and what can we do for them that surprises and delights them? And then who are the, call it 20% that might have ordered only once and why didn't they come back?
Yeah.
Probably more than 20% realistically, but like whatever that percentage is, and let's entice them to come back for a second order and get that kind of lifetime consumer value up. And so that could be with a hat or a discount or free shipping. So you kind of play with the different categories based on how you segment out your customers.
Definitely, definitely. There's a lot of creative opportunities in there with getting the attention of the customer and the consumer. I'm wondering, do you have any like Red Clay style Babyaters that you've created yet?
I mean, I'm looking at a pair of Rockstar Red Babyaters. I think we might need to rename those.
I love a little bit co-branding.
We haven't collaborated yet. We've just launched some like cute hats that I love, like a trucker hat. We've got a dad cap coming and like a little white tennis cap for a little more preppy look. But I like the idea of a hat because it's something people wear and it's a way to get the brand subliminally out there.
100%.
You know?
I agree. All right. Let's focus kind of more on the operations side of things. So from, you know, taking, when you became part of, you know, Red Clay and how the hot sauce was being made, and I know you partnered with City and things like that, like, what did you learn from, you know, at that point to, and what have you done to improve your operations, your supply chain, your procurement process, your inventory management? Kind of give us a little background of that and some of the learning mechanisms and the systems you use with that.
So when I stepped in as at CEO, we were definitely very much hand crafted, like green on that. And Jeff being a chef and being so thoughtful about his process was very hands-on in how everything was made batch to batch, because he cared, because he wanted to taste and make sure it, you know, it honored what he committed to producing, which is lovely and noble, except when Whole Foods or Fresh Market orders 10,000 bottles or whatever the order is, we can't do that in the same way. It's got to change to scale. And so when we did an angel capital raise last year, we raised about $700,000 on an angel round. A lot of that money was spent on operations and finding the right co-manufacturers to grow and scale with us while still honoring our process. So what makes Red Clay so different about everything out there, about above everything else or separate from, different than all the other hot sauces out there, is that we're cold pressed. Most hot sauces on the grocery shelf are boiled. They boil their peppers and add sugar, preservatives, or flavor. We cold press it the way you'd cold press fresh juice. And then we barrel age it in bourbon barrels the way you would age in oak barrels for really fine wine, because we wanted to get that depth of flavor. And I say we, Jeff wanted to get that depth of flavor to really honor the beautiful Fresno peppers and make a complex, delicious, flavor forward sauce. And so when we went to scale, we started, you know, used this money, hired a great ops team, and started sourcing different co-manufacturers across the country to produce our hot sauce en masse for Whole Foods and for Fresh Market, the two outstanding orders we had. And all of them heat process. Like nobody, we're not certified to cold press. We can't take you on. And we couldn't find a co-manufacturer. And I was like, oh my gosh, we're going to be hand bottling this till 5 a.m. for months to get this Whole Foods order out, because I'm not missing it. And then Ashley on our ops team actually said to me, she's like, you're not thinking outside the box. Who cold presses, like who ferments? So we've started calling on juiceries and kombucha makers. And we found a kombucha factory that was willing to take us on as a fermented sauce co-manufacturer partner. We're probably the only hot sauce in the country made at a kombucha factory, but it was a testament, I think, to us and our brand that we're not willing to sacrifice our process and sacrifice the product for ease. But also, you know, we have to figure out how to kind of learn how to scale and grow on the upside. And it becomes a lot more complex when you do things in such a unique way. And that's what differentiates you.
Yeah. And I think that's very key for brands to hear, is that we have a lot of clients like Red Clay in the kind of progressive food and drink space that are creating new brands and new ways of creating and manufacturing brands with new flavors and new ingredients, that it's not always like how it used to be done or targeting that. So kind of leveraging, you know, Ashley and a city and you guys to identify what that is without sacrificing quality, mm-hmm. is very important. How, how important is it to, you know, how important is it or was it to Red Clay to partner with it, like an ops company like City in terms of that aspect? Because a lot of founders we work with are very creative, right? They're like, Jeff, hey, I've created this great hot sauce. I want to do this. But sometimes they don't have that business background or sophistication from an operations or from a scalability standpoint, or understanding, hey, we're here, but we want to go here. So we need to leverage this type of information or knowledge or experience to kind of help us understand how to get there. Like, was that very key to kind of the growth or the expansion of Red Clay?
100%. I mean, for me, I think being a good CEO is recognizing your strengths and your weaknesses. And I am not an ops girl. Like, I know what needs to happen when, and I'm on, like, great with timelines and targets and getting it done. But it doesn't energize me. I don't enjoy it. I don't have contacts in the industry. I don't know how it works. Like, the way I said grocery, is such, a unique space. Everything from how the UPC codes and the labels need to work, what needs to go on them, to how do you get a UPC code, like things like, so for me, you know, and what I learned at Babyators is I like to keep the core team really small, our like in-house full-time employees, lean, mean, like super top performers, and then partner with expert vendors on everything else. And I don't want to build a team. I don't want to build a huge team because I don't have the bandwidth to manage the politics of a huge team and the people management of a huge team. I would much rather have my like A team that just knows how to run their 5 or 6 vendors and check in with them on Monday and check in with them on Friday. And obviously we talk throughout the week, but that's how I like to run the companies I work in. And with ops, that was a clear, big gaping black box of like, okay, neither Jeff nor I come from the operations food and bev space. We need that on our team. So we can either spend a lot of money to bring someone in house, like, you know, a 6-figure salary and get like a really good person who then also is going to need a team, right?
Yeah.
That guy is not going to execute, or a gal. And then, or you can find a partner, and we partner with Citi, but just sort of a partner who has a suite of strengths and a team of people that all do different things. And you're paying them kind of more on that kind of monthly stipend retainer.
Yeah, no, clearly with the service brand and the internet and how entities operate these days, it's much easier to outsource, you know, finance, accounting, ops, marketing, and it kind of helps you be able to focus on the core operations, business development of the brand of the company. I do feel like, you know, with some brands and some clients we've worked with, is like they're quick to hire an in-house accounting person, an in-house ops person, an in-house marketing person. I think the key aspects of that is two things, right? Is number one, if you're going to hire that key hire, that stud, that person that's been so experienced, it's a huge salary. And then they don't want to execute. They typically want to strategize, oversee, delegate some of the day-to-day stuff, right? So then you have to have another person in there because they're not going to be happy doing, like, you know, a CFO doing bookkeeping work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so you have to understand that, as well as if you, just the price point and the structure of those engagements typically are very affordable to get that full suite of expertise. So I think, you know, for all the brands out there listening, like, just understanding your strength, understand your weaknesses, and then identify key vendors that can help you out along the way.
Totally. I mean, and you mentioned finance, and that's what Accountfully does for us on the financial side. You know, everything from bookkeeping to sort of walking with the monthly statements with us, filing taxes, state taxes, things like that, that I would get that in the mail and be like, I don't know what to do with this. Mm-hmm. And so having a team of people with Accountfully on the financial side to do all sorts of different things has been incredibly helpful there. For me, since I'm not that financial background, or, you know, it's not what energizes me. I can figure it out. But you want to get people that are excited about it and enjoy doing it day to day.
Yeah, definitely. I can't imagine that accounting isn't just like, you know, excite you when you make it.
My mom is an accountant. I think in my blood, it's not.
Yeah, thanks for the shout out to Accountfully there. Kind of, you mentioned earlier you're getting into Publix and you have some huge orders that you need to get into play. So how are you handling the purchasing of those peppers, I think you mentioned, and the cash outlay with that? How are you kind of visualizing the next, you know, the setup of that? Because it's a huge kind of a deal and a big kind of, you know, tweak, I guess, to your inventory normal process on day to day.
Totally. Cash flow whiplash is like what keeps me up at night. So like, I could talk about this all day. Grocery, again, is a very particular, you know, unique industry. And I guess not necessarily this was the same in Babyators, and my CFO partner, Matthew, in Babyators, was up at night thinking about, you know, paying on the front end for all the stuff you're not going to see revenue on for months. So we buy peppers, and because of our fermentation process, we're fermented food, we're a live probiotic, unpasteurized. It takes 6 to 8 weeks to get right, to get to that fermented state. Unlike if you are if you heat process, you buy peppers, put them in the boiler, the next day you can bottle the sauce. So we are carrying cash for two more months than most hot sauces, hot sauce companies. And then once you have the bottled sauce, it takes a few weeks to get to the fulfillment center, it takes a few weeks to get to the distribution center of the store. And then the clock for the terms, right? Once they receive it. And so if that could be 45 days or 60 days, if it's a big account. So all in all, that's probably, 4 or 5 months of carrying raw goods. And we were doing that. And that's, what we spent some of that angel money last year. And we actually did the Series Seed round this year. We're in the middle of it. We have about a 1 million in, and we've got 300,000 left to raise this for the end of the year. And that's the other thing I'm doing. It's like between worrying about cash and raising cash, that's a lot of my bandwidth. That's the role of CEO. So what we have actually just done, which I think I'm really excited about, because we were carrying that cash ourselves. And for a while, I've been looking into a lot of lines of credit and debt opportunities to help carry. And the traditional model is the PO factoring. And yes. So somebody will pay you when you get your PO, and then the company's net 60 then pays the factor. But those 2 months weren't enough time for us to justify the expense of giving up kind of whatever the PO would take, the PO factoring company would take, 15%, I don't know, 10%. But we just partnered with a new debt firm that actually does raw goods factoring. And so they're buying the peppers on our behalf. They take out that line of credit and charge us interest on it. And then they get cash first. So any money that's coming in from Shopify, from Amazon, from our big POs, they start to, eat away at our debt, and then we can scale it back up. And that way I'm not spending the equity I just raised dollar for dollar. I'm able to scale a little further, which makes me happier.
Yeah, there's that's good to hear, but there's, from when we started this 5-8 years ago, like there never was these situations that exist these days, these apps, these cash flow loans, these tech enabled cash providers or factoring companies that exist out there. So definitely leverage them as much as possible for anybody out there. Some of them are very high interest, but again, it's not giving away equity. And it's typically a little bit easier to get that money up front and in a quicker process. So glad to hear on that. So while as we kind of wrap up here, I want to kind of throw it to you, Molly, to kind of summarize here just overall one do and one don't for fellow brand owners in the kind of CPG space or whatever. What would you say the do is and the don't is?
I like to say that entrepreneurship is a marathon, not a sprint. And I feel like companies that really thrive are the ones that persevere through the stuff, through the ups, through the downs, through the COVID, through the this, and it's just about kind of, it's no one decision. No one decision makes or breaks a business. It is a million small decisions and kind of, baby step, don't giving up. Get up every day and work hard for years. And you're working hard for years. And a commitment to that. And I think that is how success in entrepreneurship comes. And I think people say that about like acting in Hollywood and stuff. There's no overnight success in small business. It is years of work, and you need to enjoy the journey and enjoy the day to day. Because that's what it is. And in the same vein, I would say my don't then is where I have seen kind of friends or peer businesses falter or fail on the journey is when they get too rigid, right? They don't pivot, they don't adapt, they don't stay flexible and nimble or agile. When you talked about food service, Red Clay is a restaurant hot sauce. We were created in a restaurant. We were, you know, on restaurant tables, and that's how people got to know us in Charleston. And what was a big strategy for us on our brand awareness growth play for the next couple of years was, let's get into food service distributors. Let's be on all the right cool restaurant tables in the key culinary destinations across the South. And it was going to be a third of our revenue this year. And then all the restaurants closed for months, and the ones opening aren't putting hot sauce on tables anymore for communal enjoyment, you know? And so we don't have that revenue stream in the same way, and it's coming back, but it's a fraction of what it was. And sitting down with my head of sales and completely going through, first of all, line item by line item, what expense can we cut immediately to like preserve that cash? And then how do we pivot here in this moment and don't go down with the ship, don't get so kind of heartbroken and distraught, but what can we do that's positive? And you know, we really leaned hard into influencers and celebrity chef gifting. And so we started sending out lots of bottles to all these chefs who are now at home cooking. And that was, you know, we sent a box to Jenna Bush Hager, and she posted about it on the Today Show 3 days later, and it was a $30,000 weekend for us. So I think pivoting, you know, don't getting too rigid and thinking this is what you have to do if it's not working, and like heading towards the iceberg. You know, you need to be able to kind of stay nimble and open and flexible, and because it's so many different decisions, there's no one decision that you need to stick to. You can kind of adjust and flex. So those I would say, it's kind of two sides of the same coin, but what I think really is just this sort of long-term key to small business growth.
Oh, I love that. I definitely, I think agility and maintaining kind of a variable costing structure, just from a pure accounting standpoint, you know, with outsourcing or things like that, it's much more variable than having employees and fixed costs and things like that. So you have to kind of look at that structure. And I think that that really helps. I guess one last question. You mentioned that you like keeping a small kind of key team member or an employee team, right? And then you just mentioned your head of sales. Can you just give us like, how do you envision, like, who is your core team? Like, what are those people, right? And then what functions do they do? Because I think that that's key for somebody to understand, like, because when I talk to clients, I'm like, hey, you should outsource everything instead of, you know, the brand development, the sales, the core ops, like, you know, kind of, can you explain like how you visualize that or how you handle that?
Yeah, so right now I would say our core team is six people, and that includes Jeff and me, Jeff the chef, me the CEO, the two of us as co-founders, and then we have four employees. We have our director or VP of sales, actually, who handles all wholesale relationships. We have a director VP of direct to consumer who helps with Shopify and runs Amazon for us. And that is our newest hire. We had outsourced Amazon and found that we really wanted to bring it in-house. It just wasn't performing the way we expected it to. And we felt like we needed to understand how we reach our consumer first. So we brought in an Amazon expert in-house, which is new. Director of marketing does all our creative, social media, and any sort of collateral needs. And then director of customer service, who answers all our emails and does also customer service and PR, does our PR gifting. But we have outsourced PR team that does all the leads. So Michaeli, who's our customer service PR person, she's interacting with the PR team. We have digital ads teams outsourced. We have fulfillment outsourced. We have accounting outsourced, but Accountfully. We have operations outsourced, co-manufacturer production outsourced. And then freight, obviously, trucks. And you know, we work remotely. And so my director of sales is in Chicago. My director of direct to consumer is in Boulder. Customer service is in LA, and marketing is in Durham, North Carolina. So none of us are in one city. And so it works really well because everyone is independent and high performing and gets their stuff done.
Awesome. So yeah, so I guess sales, marketing, CEO, core operations chef, like really kind of the key aspects of it, and really who are those the folks that can touch the customers kind of as efficiently as possible you've brought in house. So with that being said, I think we're going to end the interview right now, Molly. We really appreciate your time. I think this was a fantastic episode and some really good takeaways for everybody listening and watching. Can you give us a little information of where we can find Red Clay on the shelves, on the internet, on Amazon? Where should we buy Red Clay? And give us a little bit of what are your favorite flavors, I guess, or what should we be buying?
That's tough. RedClayHotSauce.com is our website. If you don't like heat, our original and our hot honey medium are the best. If you're sort of a heat newbie, it's a more of a flavor vinegar sauce. The original pairs with seafood. There's a amped up version of that called the Carolina, the medium sauce, as well as our habanero is medium. And my personal favorite, I think, is the Verde. It's a Serrano green pepper sauce that's really fresh, herbaceous. It's sort of the surprise, like, you know, winner. There's an expression I'm blanking on right now, but it becomes like the secret cult fave. Everyone just like, it's like confused by the color, and then they try it and they're eating it every day for lunch on tacos or eggs or avocado toast or whatever. So we have an all-star pack that's original Verde and honey that is on our site if you want to try.
Awesome. Really appreciate the recommendation there. We definitely have a couple of bottles at our office here in Accompli. So yay. Love it here. So, well, that wraps up episode 2 of The Month End with Molly Feening from Red Clay Hot Sauce. Thanks again for your time, Molly. Have a good one.
Appreciate it.